Support for WPR comes from Rutabaga Paddle Sports, offering canoes, kayaks, and advice for anyone wanting to experience solitude on Wisconsin waterways. 2620 Rimrock Road in Madison or rutabagashop.com.
Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, April the 13th. Were the reports of voter fraud in recent federal elections overblown, exaggerated, pushed by Republicans for political reasons, like getting reforms put in place that could lower Democratic voter turnout? Well, court records and interviews by the New York Times and others indicate that may be the case. The Justice Department has turned up virtually no evidence of any organized effort to skew federal elections, according to yesterday's New York Times. After a five-year crackdown on voter fraud by the Bush administration, court records show about 120 people nationwide have been charged, 86 convicted. Most of those charged were Democrats, who the paper says appear to have mistakenly filled out registration forms or misunderstood eligibility rules. The paper went on to report that in Wisconsin, where prosecutors have lost almost twice as many cases as they won, the charges were brought against voters who filled out more than one registration form or were felons who were unaware that they were barred from voting. While a federal report from the Election Assistance Commission out last year said that the pervasiveness of voter fraud was open to debate, it turns out now there was little evidence of voter fraud around the nation. So people are wondering, was this report altered for political reasons? Was the problem of voter fraud exaggerated for political reasons to put in place reforms like, say, photo ID at the polls? Reforms that maybe weren't really needed? 1-800-642-1234. We will welcome your thoughts and questions on this news as we talk with our guest, 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890-263-1890 or talk at WPR.org. Talk at WPR.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Dan Tokaji, Assistant Professor of Law at the Moritz College of Law at Ohio State University. He runs the Equal Vote blog. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what were these reports of voter fraud greatly exaggerated? Can you put this into perspective for us?
I think that reports of voter fraud have indeed been greatly exaggerated. And let me try to put it in the context of the debate that's been going on throughout the country, including in Wisconsin over the last two or three years, over the voter identification issue. Mm-hmm, this is something mm-hmm. that Republicans in a number of states have been pushing very hard. And the argument is, boy, we've got a big problem with voting fraud out there, with voters going to the polls, pretending to be someone they're not, or double voting. And we therefore need voter identification measures that are going to prevent ineligible people from voting and make sure that the people who are actually showing up at the polls are who they claim to be. Well, it turns out, based on the evidence we have before us, including this most recent report that was produced for the Election Assistance Commission, problems of voting fraud, and especially voters going to the polls pretending to be someone they're not, are indeed greatly exaggerated.
Yeah. So Democrats in Wisconsin charged that the photo ID bills that were, three of them, that were vetoed by our governor, yeah, were a fix to a problem that really didn't exist. That's what you're saying looks to be the case.
And yeah, I think the most recent information provides strong support for the accusations that were made by Wisconsin Democrats in this fairly long-running battle over voter identification, and also support the governor's actions in saying no to these bills. You know, Republicans have been pushing these bills across the country, and it's really hard to come up with a good explanation for them other than the desire to suppress votes on the part of those who are likely to vote for candidates of the other side. And we've seen this happen in Georgia, in Indiana, in Missouri, and in Arizona, and each of these states' laws passed by Republican-controlled legislatures. We've also got considerable evidence in Wisconsin in particular that these measures suppress or are likely to suppress minority votes. One study, for example, found that only 22% of African American men between the ages of 18 and 24 actually have a state-issued driver's license. By contrast, a much higher percentage of white people generally have driver's licenses, which makes sense given the economic disparities that exist in your state as throughout the country.
And what does does this tell us about the Republican Party in Wisconsin, according to this New York Times report, also was pursuing this, was bringing this to the attention of the White House, really wanting this to be pursued by the Justice Department?
And that is certainly what the New York Times found in its report from a couple of days ago, in saying that the chairman or the former chairman of the Wisconsin Republican Party was very aggressive in saying we've got a lot of fraud in our system, saying it is a system that invites fraud. It turns out now that those claims were greatly exaggerated, but Wisconsin Republican Party is doing what the Republican Party in a number of states, unfortunately, has been doing, pursuing these aggressive anti-fraud measures, in my opinion, doing so as a means by which to suppress the votes of poor, minority, and disabled voters, other groups that are less likely to have the state-issued driver's license or other photo identification that would be required.
We're talking with Dan Todaji, who is an assistant professor of law at the Moritz College of Law at Ohio State University. He runs the Equal Vote blog at Moritz. And we're talking about reports that voter fraud has been greatly exaggerated in this country. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We're talking about the implication of this news and where that leaves reforms like voter ID. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 19 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, April the 13th. Inviting you to stay tuned. Join Gene Purcell, who is in for Ben Marins this afternoon between 4 and 6. He will invite your views on the news in the 4 o'clock hour. Well, we invite your views on the news that voter fraud in this country, the allegations of widespread voter fraud that we have been hearing after the past couple of federal elections appear to have been exaggerated, that there has been no coordinated or widespread voter fraud in this country, according to a new federal report. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our guest is Dan Todaji, and I'm very sorry for mispronouncing your name. Assistant professor of law at Moritz College. And we have a very, very loud telephone line. I'm wondering if we have tried to reestablish contact. Well, I don't know if calling once again will help that, but we'll see if we can live with it. But it's very hard to hear our guest with that hum. Ruth in Madison is our first caller. Let's go to Ruth. Hi, Ruth. You're on the air.
Good morning. I just wanted to make it clear. I was a deputy voter registrar for a while, And we were told that as long as a person, if they were a convicted felon, as long as they were off paper, which means that they're no longer reporting to a probation or parole officer, that they were again eligible to vote and that we should register them. And we found that a lot of felons, convicted felons, did not know that. And so we did register a lot of people that way. And when people say, you know, the way these the show has been summarized and the topics summarized, and it just says that convicted felons, I just wanted to make it clear that in Wisconsin anyway, once they're off paper, they can vote again.
Right, and that's one of the reasons that there has been some confusion over this, is the people who were convicted were still on parole or probation,
right,
and they voted, and that's one of the issues, Dan.
Yeah, and I think the caller raises an important point, because in Wisconsin and other states, for the average voter, the exact requirements regarding felony disenfranchisement laws can be very complicated. In fact, one survey found that even a lot of election officials aren't quite clear and have differing opinions as to exactly what the law requires. So the fact that somebody who might have committed a felony in the past actually votes certainly doesn't necessarily mean in all states they violated state laws. Even if they did violate a state law, they might have done so unknowingly, and that's not voter fraud.
Yeah. And thank you very much, Ruth. Gene in Madison is with us now. Hi, Gene.
Yeah, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I'm glad to talk to someone from Ohio, because the Justice Department, which when you think of voter and voter fraud or fraud in the elections process, you now might today get the impression that all is well. The Justice Department has spent 5 years looking at a molehill and found there isn't much there. But the mountains, such as any Ohio resident who reads their newspapers would be aware of, or perhaps a district in Florida, or I could go on, the election process we have is broken in this country, and it's broken in the part of we don't know how we count our votes and we don't care, but we're very worried about if a person is eligible to vote, but we seem to have little concern whether or not the vote is properly counted. And in Ohio, even if you want to do a recount, we don't care if they rig the recount. Consequently, please, people listening today to this discussion, don't think that voter fraud and voting things, it's just nothing. There is some very serious issues here which both political parties conveniently choose to ignore, misdirect public attention to a minuscule area of technical, an 84-year-old lady didn't understand the rules and she voted and she was put in jail. But what happens to the people who do all those nice things? And please, since you must, I don't know if you live in Franklin County or which county you live in Ohio. Ohio is one of those classic cases of, God, the stink isn't coming from voter registration fraud. It's coming from something else. I'll hang up and listen to your comments, and I appreciate the fact that you're looking at the molehill when the mountain is staring you in the face.
All right, Professor Tokaji.
Well, I guess I have to agree with the caller's concern that the attention that has been directed toward voter fraud is indeed misdirected, that's not the biggest problem facing our system. And certainly in my home state of Ohio, we have had more than our share of problems, and most of those problems have not to do with fraud, but with voters being denied access, with voters not having their votes accurately counted. And the caller referred to the 2004 election when, believe it or not, Ohio's was still using the old hanging Chad punch card, a system that is well known to to result in a disproportionately large number of votes not being counted. We've also had problems with provisional ballots, also with voter identification, with registration issues, with long lines at the polling place, with intimidating challenges to voter eligibility, as well as recounts and contests. So we've certainly had our share of problems in Ohio, and I think these in some ways are microcosms for the problems that we've had throughout the country. And one of the areas that we should call this focus, voting machines, I think is certainly a big area of concern, one that our new Secretary of State, Jennifer Bruner, a Democrat who was elected to replace the outgoing Secretary of State, Republican Ken Blackwell, is looking at carefully. I guess I don't agree with the caller on the point that, or the suggestion that these voting machine, electronic voting issues haven't received a lot of discussion. In fact, I actually think they've received a great deal of discussion and attention. They're receiving attention in Congress right now, and to my mind, we've actually, not to say that these things aren't important, but we haven't paid enough attention to the issues of vote suppression, and particularly the ways in which barriers to voting, like voter identification, are likely to suppress the votes, especially of people in our minority communities.
And now, Gene called this the molehill, but is it a huge deal or not that this first federal report from the Election Assistance Commission last year may have been altered for political reasons, that they knew that voter fraud wasn't some big widespread organized thing, but instead said, well, maybe it's open to debate.
Yeah, I think the problem of voter fraud, from what we know right now, is pretty much a molehill, at least when it comes to the polling place. I think the larger story is a mountain, and the larger story has to do with the way that research is done, with making sure that we're getting accurate information, with making sure that information about our voting system and how it's functioning isn't being suppressed by partisans, with making sure that U.S. attorneys' offices aren't being manipulated for political purposes to prosecute problems that don't really exist, at least in any significant way, such as alleged voter fraud. I think that is the mountain here, and that's what we should be focused on in this unfolding story.
Yeah, can you, what evidence is there? Is there evidence that there was some pressure put on by the White House to get federal prosecutors to go after these voter fraud cases that were mainly Democrats?
Yeah, well, the New York Times over the past couple of days has uncovered some evidence to that effect. There have been statements by Karl Rove, among others, suggesting that fraud is really this huge and growing problem in the United States. In fact, those were almost exactly Mr. Rove's words, saying election integrity issues, quote-unquote, were an enormous and growing problem. So I think there is some evidence that there has been an attempt by the White House, as well as some but not all Republicans throughout the country, to exaggerate the problem of voter fraud. And in my opinion, this is being used as an effort to suppress voters of the other side. Now, how deeply that went down, the extent to which U.S. attorneys' offices were influenced by this desire, we don't really know yet.
We're going to check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about voter fraud or the lack of it. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 7:36 on this Friday, April the 13th. There is very little evidence of widespread voter fraud in this country, according to a new report in the New York Times. We are talking about voter fraud or the lack of it, and wondering if you have any thoughts or questions about this. Wondering where this leaves reforms like voter ID, talking to our guest about the different reforms that were put in place in some states and still being debated in Wisconsin. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, talking about the politics of this voter fraud issue, all of the complaints, how this also plays into the U.S. attorney scandal that's on the front burner in Congress as well. Wondering why a report issued by the Election Assistance Commission last year appears to have been altered and exaggerating the problem of voter fraud. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our guest is Dan Tokaji. He is an assistant professor of law at the Moritz College of Law at Ohio State University. He runs the Equal Vote blog at Moritz. And I wanted, Professor, to talk to you about another story that's in Wisconsin's news this morning. The State Elections Board in Wisconsin is asking local district attorneys to investigate 82 cases in which convicted felons may have voted in the last November election. Apparently, a new law was put in place to have the board check the voter list and then look at people who were on parole or probation. And there are 82 names that match, apparently. So there'll be more of an investigation. But others point out that this is one vote per county in Wisconsin. What is your take on this?
I mean, I think it is appropriate that such cases be investigated, but it's also important to put this in perspective. When you've got 82 cases in a state with some 2.1 million voters, that is a minuscule amount of ineligible people voting. And it's also important to keep in mind that not every one of these 82 cases is going to actually turn out to have been a case of voting fraud. In most of these cases, I would venture to guess, you're likely to have voters who simply didn't understand that they were ineligible to vote, who thought that once they got out of jail, even though they were still on probation or parole, they were eligible to vote. And it's amazing that a lot of times election officials don't even understand the rules, and it's understandable that they don't understand the rules because they can be very complicated. One survey went around to election officials throughout the country and interviewed them about what their own state's rules were, and surprisingly enough, the interviewers got different responses from people within the same state. So if election officials don't know the rules, it's understandable that voters also wouldn't, and I wouldn't be surprised. You know, it's not surprising that you've got 82 people. That's a very low number in a state as big as Wisconsin.
Yeah. So we also heard, though, about a lot of people voting twice in elections in Wisconsin and around the country. Was that happening?
No, not at all, according to the most recent federal report that was prepared for the EAC, the Election Assistance Commission, a commission established by the Help America Vote Act, and it's been reported on widely in the last couple of days. This is a minuscule problem, and there's practically no evidence of double voting by voters, and it makes sense. Look, why would anybody try to double vote? There's a very high chance, if you do that, that you're going to get caught. And what's the benefit for the voter? Well, the benefit is that they get to cast two votes. The risks are high, but the rewards from an individual voter's perspective are very low. So to think that this is a widespread problem just isn't supported by evidence, and it makes common sense that there's not a whole lot of double voting in this country.
Yeah. I have talked to guests, though, on this program in the past who have said, you know, if one person fraudulently votes in some way or is voting who shouldn't be voting, that, you know, that is one too many.
Well, I can't disagree with that in principle, but the real question is, what steps are we going to take to combat fraud? And if we take steps that are going to include, going to exclude or impose barriers to 5% of our population in order to involve In order to get at less than 100 instances of fraud in a state of 2.1 million voters, well, that's just not smart, right? We're going to take steps that are actually going to suppress more votes than we're going to, quote-unquote, save by preventing fraud. And it's especially problematic when you consider the fact that the measures that are most frequently talked about to get at voting fraud, things like strict identification requirements, requiring voters to produce identification or proof of citizenship that a lot of them just don't have, even though they're eligible, a lot of these measures are going to have a disproportionate effect. We're going to disproportionately exclude poor people, minorities, elderly people, people of color, and that is going to, in the grand scheme of things, have an impact on elections. By contrast, there's been no showing whatsoever that these minuscule instances of fraud have any effect on any federal or statewide elections.
Yeah. What about the talk that? Well, actually, let me bring in some callers. Jeanette in Milwaukee is with us. Hi, Jeanette. You're on
Hi.
The air.
In fact, there was a gentleman who was running for my state senator in Wisconsin, Donovan Riley, his name was. And some organization found out that he voted twice in an election. I don't know how they do this, but they were going to prosecute him after the November election. And to your guest, I'd like to know, what is the penalty for that? He had to drop out of the race. And to your listening audience, I wonder if he was prosecuted, because I never read anything in the paper or heard anything about his trial.
Yeah, I'll ask Karen Prager when she has a moment to see if she can look up what happened to that particular candidate. I thought he was running for maybe Congress, not Senate, but I mean, what happens to somebody if they are found to have voted twice? I do recall that it was alleged that he voted in two different districts in a previous election.
I mean, the bottom line is it's a felony, and people can go to jail if they do that. And, you know, occasionally it does happen. There's a story, part of the New York Times story from yesterday was about a woman from Milwaukee who was on probation, attended a voting rally, didn't understand that she was ineligible, and she was convicted, and she's currently serving time in jail. She's a grandmother, and her family misses her, but she was found to have committed a felony, and she's in jail. So the penalties are pretty stiff for this sort of stuff. And to the caller, let me make clear, I'm not denying that voting fraud and double voting, voting by people who know they're ineligible, occasionally happens. The point is it's extremely rare. And this most recent report, which, by the way, was prepared by one person chosen by the Democrats, one person chosen by the Republicans, and the latter person, the Republican, is a fairly well-known Republican lawyer. This was a balanced report. They pulled out the stops to find out all the evidence they could uncover, and at the end of the day, they found very little evidence that there's any widespread voter fraud. And to the extent that it exists, it's not really with people, by and large, going to the polls pretending to be someone they're not or voting when they're not eligible, but with mail-in absentee ballots, which also makes some sense.
Yeah, thank you, Jeanette, for the call. Yeah, the report, the court records showing nationwide 120 people have been charged with some sort of voting fraud, 86 convicted. Most of those charged have been Democrats. Most of those charged by the Justice Department appear to have mistakenly filled out registration forms or misunderstood eligibility rules. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 13 minutes before 8 o'clock. Coming up after 8, it's our regular Friday Week in Review. We'll talk about the big political news stories of the week from Washington to right here in Wisconsin. And in this case, It's a little bit of both. We're talking about voter fraud and a new report that has surfaced that shows that voter fraud is not widespread or organized or as big a problem as we have been led to believe. We're wondering why we were led to believe that, for one thing, and talking some about the implications of this news. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our guest, Dan Tokaji, an assistant professor of law at the Moritz College of Law at Ohio State University. Our next caller is Catherine in Milwaukee. Hi, Catherine. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm just calling to give you information about the Donovan Riley case. It's going to be published in the Bayview Compass that was printed yesterday. He ran as a Democrat for the District 7 Senate seat in Wisconsin, and he pleaded guilty and was found guilty by reason of his plea in Waukesha County, fined $10,000, and paid that. And he voted in Illinois and Wisconsin.
Well, thanks for sharing that news with us, Catherine. We appreciate it.
Okay.
So, $10,000 fine for voting in Illinois and in Wisconsin.
Yeah. And, again, nobody's saying that these things don't happen. It's just that they happen extremely rarely. And let me just give some national figures. This is throughout the country in federal election cases. We've had a relatively small number of cases brought, and it's not because the government hasn't been looking, but because they haven't found very much. Less than 100 people nationwide indicted between October of 2002 and September of 2005. Of that number, we've only had 26 voters who were actually convicted of anything. We've had a few more party and campaign officials, but in terms of voter fraud, the numbers are not just small, they're microscopic.
Yeah, what are we going to see happen here, Professor Tokaji? I mean, we have had a lot of states put in reforms, some reforms at the federal level. Wisconsin has put in some, still battling over a voter ID. Now it's a proposed constitutional amendment. It hasn't passed the legislature yet. But what does this mean?
Well, I think there are two things to look out for in the larger debate in terms of the implications of this most recent research showing that voter fraud is very uncommon. The first is the impact it has on measures that are making it more difficult to vote, things like photo identification laws. Yeah, they seem, for maybe the average citizen, not to be such a great burden. But when you consider the fact that a lot of people, especially minorities, people with disabilities, don't have a state-issued driver's license, they do pose a severe burden. I think this latest information tends to cast doubt on the exaggerated claims of fraud made by those urging stringent voter identification requirements. The second implication has to do with the emerging U.S. attorney scandal, and this has to do with and claims that the current administration is using the levers of government, including the Justice Department, including U.S. attorneys, to further its own partisan agenda.
Yeah. Do you know anything about the case, the Milwaukee U.S. attorney Steve Biskupic, and how he might have been questioned as to whether he was pursuing voter fraud cases aggressively enough, even though he was pursuing them, he wasn't winning very many of them, apparently.
Well, there's no question that he was pursuing it aggressively, and I know that he had a big press conference a while back where he made some strong claims about there being fraud. It turned out that when you got right down to it, there was very little. There were 14 people who faced federal charges, and a report that I read yesterday indicated that all but one of those people was African American. At the end of the day, according to the New York Times, only 5 of those cases were won.
Yeah. We're going to take other callers. John in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. This reminds me a little bit of the story that they told about Lyndon Johnson, where he accuses an opponent in a race of having relations with a pagan. When he's questioned why he does it and that nobody will believe it, he says, "Yeah, but I just want to hear him explain it or fight it." we're having the wrong discussion, and I know somebody earlier talked about that, that having this discussion blinds us from what really is the voter fraud, which is voter suppression issues. I'd rather see 10 people vote who shouldn't vote than 3,000 turned away, and we're not even discussing that.
What do you mean we're not discussing that, John?
No, I don't mean you. Mm-hmm. I don't mean a president. I mean the notion that the story now, I mean, think of what the story is. The story is there isn't voter fraud. Well, that's not true. There's not the voter fraud that the Republicans wanted us to think there was. There's still the voter fraud of the Republicans suppressing votes all around the country by manipulating the availability of ballots, the availability of machines, and that's not the story. The story is now that everything is okay, and that isn't even the right question. The question is really voter suppression, not double voting. And just quickly, secondly, I worked the last two elections for the Democratic Party trying to ensure that people were able to vote. And one of the things that's so sad is that despite all the rhetoric about people caring on both sides about voting, there's no money for it. The people who are working these polls, and I don't mean to be, you know, rude about it, but they tend to be fairly elderly, and most of them have no idea. And I've watched people get continuously send people away because they didn't understand which district the address was in. And, you know, we'd have people coming back to us, and unless I interceded or somebody else on either side, you know, people were being turned away. So if we really care about voter fraud, we ought to be talking about voter suppression because it affects many more votes, whoever it is. And secondly, we ought to be spending money on people to work the polls and making certain that we don't have lines. Nobody can be talking about voter fraud and caring about it who is not prepared to fund it so that kids in Democratic districts like where I worked weren't standing in line for 3 hours waiting to vote, while out in Mequon, you know, they're waiting 15 minutes.
Yeah. I know, Professor Tokaji, you would certainly agree that the voter suppression issue is the story.
I think that's right, and I think that's what I've been trying to say, mm-hmm. perhaps not as clearly as I might have.
I think he just thought not this program, but in general.
No, I think the caller is exactly right. The real problem we have to be worried about is vote suppression, voter fraud, that is voters pretending to be someone they're not or otherwise intentionally voting when they're not eligible to vote. This is a minuscule problem. And the problem here is that we've got some folks, especially elements of the Republican Party, who are trying to exaggerate claims of voter fraud in an effort to suppress votes. And that's exactly what I'm concerned about. The caller's also right that we really need to pay attention to polling place operations. We have a real serious problem, particularly in our urban areas, with poll workers either not being adequately trained or simply not being adequate. And God love the people who volunteer their time to serve as poll workers, but we need to do something about this problem. This is a nationwide problem and a nut that we've quite not yet cracked. And the kinds of lines that people have faced in some places, 4-hour lines in parts of my state, Ohio, are indeed inexcusable. And this is something that we also have to address before the next election.
Yeah. Paul in Monona is next. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Hi. I guess I just want to follow up on the frustration of the past caller because just our, in some ways, even our rhetoric, what's happening is inexcusable and voter suppression as opposed to voter fraud. The guy who comes to the election thing and they're accusing us, the voters, of voter fraud, and we're accusing them of suppression and making mistakes. And I wondered why what will it take? Will it take a new president and a new administration for us to be able to go on the offensive and turn this tide around? Because it's really blaming the victim in quite a dramatic way. And Help America Voter Act is really like a legalized way to do what they did, which is illegal. It's a criminal violation to violate the Voter Rights Act of 1964. And I know there's been some court cases, and I wondered if you have any information on, are they proceeding at all? Can we turn this tide and turn the argument around?
Well, I agree with the basic sentiment that we have to be focused on trying to stop voter suppression and, in terms of an affirmative agenda, expand voter access, make it easier for eligible people to vote. That ought to really be our priority. Now, I I guess I don't, you know, stepping away from this issue for a moment and looking at the broader election reform picture, I don't take quite as dim a view as to where we are now. I actually do think that we have had improvements over the past 6 years since Florida's 2000 election. About a million votes were saved in 2004 as compared to 2000 as a result of improved voting technology and better procedures at the polling place. We've got other reforms that have been put in place in a number of states to make it easier to vote. I think we need to look at what Wisconsin has nationwide in terms of election day registration. We also need to look at things like early voting, expanded absentee voting, perhaps, to make it easier for people to participate. A lot of these reforms, I would suggest, are most likely to be accomplished at the state level. So I think it's really in state legislative bodies where those of us who care about making it easier to vote and making it easier for eligible people to vote have the most work to do.
We'll leave it there. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Dan Tokaji is an assistant professor of law at the Moritz College of Law at Ohio State University. He runs the Equal Vote blog at Moritz. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing the hour and to Karen Prager for on-air production. If you would like to listen to this or any of our talk shows a second time, or one that you missed, you can go to our website. We archive our talk shows on our website, wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.